Get right to an early morning guest. He was busy last night doing a hockey game in Montreal. We welcome to the show a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. Easy for me to say. Here's Dave Poulin this morning. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. And I'm listening and learning just like everyone else is on this. And I thought, you know, Ottawa's dealing with it yesterday with the orange shirts and even Brady to stand up and be very candid in not knowing very much about it, because a lot of people didn't and don't know very much about it. I think we're all learning as we go about it, and that's for the better, for sure. And I think, you know, we started wearing orange, I guess, a couple of years ago with TSN on this day, orange ties or orange, you know, pocket pups or whatever it was. And it was an awareness for everybody, and everybody knows about it at different levels. But the good thing in the last couple of years has been the awareness and the learning. You put it very well.
What exactly, Dave, are organizations, you touched on what the Sens did yesterday, what exactly are teams and organizations around the NHL doing?
I think it's a variety of things around the league, and the color orange has become so prominent on this day, and, you know, learning on why it was orange the first day with the child whose orange shirt was taken away, and the identity was taken away, and, you know, we all talk about identity so much with teens, and to have your identity removed through no fault of your own or no ability to change that of your own is a scary thing. And we strive for identity in our lives, and we strive for identity with our teams. And so I think that's the use of the color orange, how it's used, how it's prominent, how it's there, and it's very loud. And that's, I think most teams are doing something right along those lines.
And to that, Pooley, in the case of Brady Tkachuk, would you also agree, you've lived in the United States for a long time like I did, this is a much bigger topic in the Canada than it is in the United States. I don't recall any real discussion on this other than the Washington football team.
I agree. And that's, but the good news is now they are learning about it through these exact days like yesterday with Ottawa. And, you know, a lot of those players are American. A lot of them will take it home with them. And just being on the news and being out there and, you know, doing things like they did yesterday with all the players involved is so important to spread that. But you're right. I mean, I lived in different states on the East Coast. I lived in the Midwest, and it wasn't anywhere near as prominent. But it wasn't as prominent in Canada either, Simmer.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the matter at hand. You did a couple of games with Montreal this week, including last night's 4-3 loss to the Winnipeg Jets. A late loss. Nate Schmidt gets the winner with 18 seconds to go. Just maybe, first of all, an overall impression of the night for both teams last night.
Well, you're looking at micro things in these games. You're not looking at so much of the team part, although Winnipeg was stressing the team defense. And, you know, with the lineups that are involved, even us learning the players that are involved, you may only see once, and you may have to learn a name and only say it once. But you're trying to look at the play of individuals. And there were a lot of encouraging things for Montreal early. And ironically, it was a real veteran who coughed the game up, and that was Evgeny Dadonov. And it is Dadonov again, guys, not Dadonov.
Oh, good. Just Daddy. It's just Daddy. Daddy's back.
Yeah, Daddy. And you know, and when it came out and it was Dadonov again, and Brian Mudrick is so, as all the play-by-play guys are so, you know, they're so, they know how important it is to get the player's name right, but they go to the players themselves, and you know, the good guys all go to them, and they hold their phone up and they say your name exactly how you want to say it. And a player will say, well, it doesn't matter. See, yes, it does matter. It matters to me, and it matters to everybody. And so I guess he is back to Dadonov. But up 3-2, and the power play had come back and scored two goals, and it had struggled earlier in the game, and it was Cole Caulfield who got the go-ahead goal, and then it was simply 4-on-4 play and a Dadonov turnover that led to young Brad Lambert for Winnipeg scoring a goal, and then they came back. Nate Schmidt got one, and it was off Dadonov's stick as well, the game-winning goal. So it was a veteran who was involved in both of the final two goals. But some of the play of the young individuals that, you know, Joshua Ross stood out, and he was a kid who emerged in the queue and put up huge points after he was drafted in the queue. And, you know, there were some just moments where he looked good. Young Caden Gooley is going to be a really good player, guys. The D out of the Western League that got traded to Edmonton late and had the big, big Memorial Cup run and playoff run. He is going to be a very good player, and he's going to be a good player now. Montreal has a group of young defensemen, but I think he's emerged from that group. And the other name that you guys will get to know in the next couple games, I would think, is Arber Jackeye, And you'll get to know it because you'll look at the name, and it's 8XHE, and I think about this now, KAJ. And those are the six letters that spell Jackeye. And, you know, he's a looks like a real talented young kid. And they actually had him running the power play last night. And on the Winnipeg side, I think Rick Bowness was disappointed in his first game, in which a lot of veterans played and played some kids last night. And Pierre-Luc Dubois had moments of being Pierre-Luc Dubois. But young Brad Lambert is a kid who we watched these guys play in the U18s, and he was playing pro hockey at 16 in Finland. And we watch them play and we think, oh, this is going to be a star. And then when we watch those young kids, we tend to start to find the blemishes as they did. And he was a player who everybody thought was top five, top 10, you know, was a big kid who skated. And his uncle, Lane Lambert, is the coach of the New York Islanders. And his dad played over in Europe and he grew up and played over in Europe. I think he came home for 1 year and played at Notre Dame and Wilcox and then went back over. And so he slid in the draft to number 30. He was the second first round pick taken by Winnipeg, and he had a good game as well, had a goal and assist and was skating and looked good. So that's what you're looking for right now, is individual players. But now the cutdown start, guys, and Montreal announced a couple of young kids getting sent back last night. And it's a little bit different exhibition schedule, whereas you used to play, you know, everybody played 10 games in the past, and now it's down to 7 or 8, and it's very localized. And you know, even Ottawa had the one road trip to Winnipeg, and they had the split squad in Toronto, and now they're basically home the rest of the way for the last 5. So it sets up well to make some decisions and see the players. It's going to get just a little more intense, and it's going to get ramped up as more and more guys get in these games.
Do you see Caulfield as a guy that could score 50, Pooley?
Oh, 50 is a big number, Simmer.
I guess challenge in the league. Like, I look at DeBrincat. I look at some guys. I mean, hey, this guy, for whatever reason, under Marty St. Louis, just took off, and he scored goals his whole life. I mean, he is, to me, worth the price of admission when you're watching him play.
He really is. He finds a way. He took a shot in the third period. His body was well below the goal line, but his stick was probably 8 inches below the goal line. And he was on his offside, and he took a shot at the young goaltender home in Winnipeg, and it got caught up in his gear. Like, it had a chance to go in. And I'm not even dreaming of taking that shot on that. And, you know, he's got, it looks like he's a little quicker. And Brian asked me about it last night, about the speed factor, because on the rush, he looked like he had a little more speed. And I said, I'm not sure he's quicker than he was or faster than he was last year, but he's knowing when to use his speed more. And because he does look faster and, you know, he's stronger, he's put on weight. I've watched this player, you know, I do the U18s and I do them, and, you know, we cover the World Juniors, and you watch these kids grow up at the University of Wisconsin. He's always scored goals. And the question was whether he could do it at the National Hockey League level with his size. His size is not a factor, guys. It's flat out not a factor. He's going to score. He's playing with, I think, an excellent playmaking centerman in Nick Suzuki. That's who his regular line mate will be. A large part of it will be that. It'll be, you know, the combination of those two. But he's capable of being one of the top goal scorers in the league, I believe. So I guess 50 is attainable at some point. Mm.
Well, Ottawa fans are going to see a lot of Montreal with 4 straight exhibition games starting tomorrow night at home, the only home exhibition game. Speaking of the Sens, they'll play the Leafs tonight in a neutral site game in Belleville. And Dave, a lot of the discussion yesterday here on the radio station has been around the power play, as it was kind of spitballing it through the summer. How's DJ Smith going to work all this? And at least initially, his decision is they're going to run with the same 5 guys on one power play that we saw for most of last year, and Alex DeBrincat and Claude Giroux. But DeBrincat has been the one that everybody's sort of talking about. He is on the other unit. So what do you make about the decision initially to leave DeBrincat, their best goal scorer, off that so-called first power play?
I'm thinking these are very nice discussions to have, JR. That's what I'm thinking. We call these highbrow problems. If these are the problems you're discussing at this point, this is really good. You're going to have to find out who works best with who. You look at it on paper, you think something works, and then you find out that, you know, maybe that player doesn't fit there, or maybe that, you know, you go in with a plan. You have to go with a plan. And I don't disagree with going with what went well last year. The components last year were something we talked about a lot. Left shot, right shot combination. And, you know, and having the ability to slide Kachuk below the goal line or the front of the net. And then Babson, same thing on the other side, below the goal line, front of the net. And Josh Norris probably emerged as being more of a shooting option than people originally thought. Like, he's a shooting centerman off that half ball. And, you know, and you have to figure out the top as well, because Thomas Chabot should score more goals as a power play guy back there. He simply should. And so I think this will play out, and you have to start somewhere. And to start with what was effective last year, I think is good and smart. And when you can drop a couple of components like a Giroux and like a DeBrincat in, and Giroux to me, you know, when he was on his offside in Philadelphia and Simmons was in front of the net, that was when the effectiveness was off the charts. I mean, Simmons scored a lot of goals, just tip screen. He's a right shot, but he could pop down below the goal line. I think it's going to play out, and it may not look like it looks right now, and that's okay. I'm not sure how you keep an elite goal scorer like Alex DeBrincat off what you would call the first power play. Hey, if you've got enough guys that you have two power plays that are equally effective, and there's a 1 and a 1A, and you don't care what you're called, and whoever's rested goes first, and that may be a factor as well, who was on the ice together, you know, what line combinations are disrupted, then that's good. But I just think this plays out, guys. I am not, you know, if I'm Alex DeBrincat, I'm like, you know what, I'll be where I'm going to be, and I'm going to score my power play goals, and call me what you want to call me.
Yeah, I don't see it that way at all, Pooley, and I look at something like this, and again, the issue I have with the coach is there's too many situations. This is a season you want to get off a good start. Tim Stutz as a left shot is not that comfortable, in my opinion, in that spot. The obvious is DeBrincat. Why would you waste a second of? You've had 6 months to think about this, or the whole summer. I don't understand this idea of, well, let's see how it plays out. You know what makes a good power play, which you do, because you're a great, you know, hockey guy and especially a penalty killer, is more reps in the preseason and more reps in to start the season. This idea of let's see how it plays out, I just don't understand how anybody goes with that. In a season that matters so much, that thing is so obvious to me. I can't believe that people are kind of ducking it and saying, well, you know, they were the 20th ranked power play last year, Pooley. Who cares how they finished the season? They were playing they're playing meaningless hockey games against backup goaltenders.
And I think it could very well get there, Simmer.
But why wouldn't you, Pooley, though? I guess more of the issue is we've seen this in the past with D.J. Smith. But why would Alex DeBrincat has 160 career goals? Why are you bringing this guy in at $9 million and having him? That's a second power play. It's not a matter of when they're going to play or when they're not. Hey, that other power play is going to be the first ones over the boards. I can't for the life of me understand this.
Well, you know what? You make a good argument, Simmer, but and it very well may get there. I mean, you haven't seen the combinations on the ice yet. They practiced it. You haven't seen the lineups yet.
Why would you give up the seventh pick overall for a 40 goal scorer? And then when you're bringing him in, and you know this better than anybody, you're bringing this guy in, and you're basically telling him you're on the second power play. Claude Drew a little different later in his career, but think of that mentality. Like you've brought in, like you think of great players that you played with in the past. If you rolled into training camp and said to Tim Kerr, listen, we're going to start you on the second power play, what's his reaction going to be?
I think he'd laugh. He'd say, I'm going to be on the first power play. I'll be the first power play guy. And I'm that's, you know, you call me what you want to call me. I'm going to be the first power play guy. I've scored 34 power play goals. I still hold the NHL record in power play goals. And I think you're playing too much into it, Simmer. I really do. I think it's going to settle. It's going to get to where it has to go. And maybe the original thought is, okay, that's too many shooters on one power play. Maybe that's, you know, and we got to figure that out. And maybe
is that, has that ever happened in the NHL where you have too many shooters on a power play?
It may have. I mean, you're not putting someone on, you know, Ovechkin's power play on the other side, who's the premium option for a left-handed one-timer. He's the power play. Everybody knows where it's going to go. Everybody knows what it's going to do. But once again, this is going to play out, and I very well think you may see DeBrincat and Josh Norris on the same power play, which would be your first power play, and Thomas Chabot running it from the top. And, you know, and once again, you've got five exhibition games left here. You know, to say you have to go hard, fast, right from day one with the five players you think are going to be the unit that starts the regular season, I think you're fine doing what you're doing right now.
Yeah, I totally disagree. I again, in the season of urgence like this, you have to. And also, the thing that happened with Ottawa's power play, people have to remember Pooley last year, it became incredibly deliberate. Norris was the only shooting option. Like, I honestly don't know if people have watched the tapes. I'm hearing how great the power play was. I don't know that his shooting percentage is going to be the same. So the idea that you wouldn't have to bring it there, again, does not make any sense whatsoever.
Let's revisit this conversation.
Oh, for sure.
Tonight,
I know, for sure.
You know, there's still time, and we haven't seen a lineup yet in an exhibition game. And now you get down, and it does compress, though, because there's five games left. And what is the starting lineup going to play? Is it going to play three games? And also, you have to factor in who you're playing against. You know, your last four games are all against Montreal. And it's almost like you have to figure out nights when both lineups are going to be full lineups. Because the last thing you want is to dress your full lineup against a weak Montreal lineup or them to do the same back against you. So it's a little tricky going down the stretch here to see what lineups will play.
Well, they're really going to put the emphasis on suiting up and taking a look at these two power play units over the next couple of games. And so we'll see the one unit tonight. Wanted to ask you about your colleague Darren Dreger's report that trade talks involving Jake Chychrun are, to use his word, intensifying. Do you believe that Chychrun is going to be dealt before the start of the season?
It wouldn't surprise me, but it wouldn't surprise me to see it go a little bit longer. And here's why. JR, teams are getting in and figuring out what they have. And just as Simmer's figuring out the power play, they're figuring out what they have. Is somebody emerging in a city that's going to make somebody else available? And, you know, and for instance, in Montreal, I think the emergence of this Arbor Jack guy is why they traded Alexander Romanov. And they think they have a physical left shot defenseman who, over the course of last season, albeit in junior hockey, emerged to a point and they've seen enough. And they've got enough young D that they felt they could move a player. Now, where else has that happened around the league that we're not watching right now? And who else might be available? And obviously, there's a number of teams that are in on Chychrun. But does somebody have a player in their own camp who's emerged who they say, okay, we've got a player here. We've got a guy who, you know, we weren't sure about. But now we've only seen him for a couple weeks in an NHL camp, and we think he's the real deal. And that's going to change our thinking on someone else we have. So teams are trying to figure out what they have. Is there going to be a key injury that forces somebody else to make a move? And I think that's where the patience of Bill Armstrong is coming in. He doesn't have to move him right now. He obviously has no hesitation to make a move. He's done that. But it's the one chip that he has, the most prominent chip, that's the most valuable commodity around the NHL. He set a price in everyone else's mind. So far, it's too high. But does that same price change for other teams as they get into their seasons? And if that's the case, and you know, I'm of the mind right now that I would be patient if I were Ottawa. I would. If the price is too high, you know, if the price doesn't change, then my mind doesn't change. Because the need in Ottawa, it's there. It's real. The fit seems to be too perfect. But they don't want to give up something that has been asked for. And why are they more willing to do it now than they were in the summer?
And to that, Pooley, they tried to trade him at the deadline. They tried to trade him at the draft. Is that the smartest thing? Hey, we saw with Matt Duchene a few years ago. I'm like, God, this guy, come on, you're holding on too long. Is it better from Arizona? I think they kind of explained that. Just say, hey, let's hold patient here. And by November, wherever, somebody is going to probably overpay because they are struggling.
They are, and there'll be early pressures early in a season. It may be on a general manager, Simmer. It may be on a team. Yeah, it may be on someone not living up to their expectations. Or on the other side of it, you know, somebody may, you know, there could be a combination of moves here. Like, you're already watching some, you know, like, I don't know if Toronto can ever be a factor because of their cap situation, but all of a sudden a rash of injuries at a position and, you know, a player who's holding out signs. In Rasmus Sandin, because now he thinks he's got an opportunity in Toronto to play the role he wants to play. He took the same money. Toronto didn't budge on the money. They changed the second year a little bit, so his qualifying offer would be a little bit higher, but they didn't change on the base of the money. And so situations change as it progresses here. And clearly, whatever, there's 31 other teams in the league that wouldn't mind having Jeff. I'm allowed to say Jeff, aren't I?
Yes.
Jacob Chychrun. You know, there's a number of teams that would love to have him, and the fact that he hasn't been traded yet, there's a reason.
Last picture I saw of Jeff Chychrun, actually, there are some teams, and I've looked at the defenses that probably wouldn't still mind Jeff Chychrun, actually, even at his advanced age now.
So. Is he not one of the best people on the planet as well, Pooley? You know him very well.
Oh,
the
he's
Philly
right
days.
Up there.
Yeah, what a great guy.
The Philly days. Terrific guy. Terrific family.
All right, good stuff. I know you got a trip back home. Really appreciate the time and the early morning visit. Have a great weekend. Look forward to chatting with you again on Monday.
Enjoy the weekend, gentlemen.